I decided I guess I needed a good sermon, or maybe it was Sabbath morning, so I was tuned to Christian radio because I didn't like the silence. But I remember hearing a radio preacher talk about how the topic was creation, and they were studying Genesis 1, and he said, if you will write into the radio program, and I'm sure, I don't remember for sure, but I'm quite sure it was Ann Sends Some Money, we will send you 6 commemorative coins for the 6 days of creation. I got to thinking about that. I don't think it had ever crossed my mind before that there were only 6 days of creation. How many days did God spend creating the world? 6 or 7? Well, I hear a division of opinion. Let's talk about it. We're going to begin a series today. I don't know how long it's going to last or what territory we'll cover, but we're going to talk about experiencing Sabbath. You see, as Seventh-day Adventists, we've been pretty good at nailing down the fact of the Sabbath, that it is, that it's a command of God, that it comes from creation, that it's in the 4th commandment, it's one of the big 10, that it's a blessing, but it's not optional, that it wasn't changed, and Christ kept it, and Peter kept it, and Paul kept it, and we all ought to be keeping it. And we're pretty good at nailing that down. In fact, we believe it enough that we all meet on the wrong day every week as far as most everybody else is concerned. We believe it to the point where we put our jobs on the line. We do all kinds of things for the sake of keeping the Sabbath. It is. The Sabbath is. But how often do we stop to talk about what does it mean to enter into the experiencing of Sabbath? Now, I'm going to studiously avoid the phrase how to keep the Sabbath, because that automatically turns my mind, and probably yours, to what? The list of do's and don'ts, which are mostly don'ts. The Sabbath basically means a day each week when we don't do a whole bunch of things we normally do. And as kids, it was kind of like, if it's fun on Sabbath, you have to suspend it. If it's interesting, you can't read it or watch it. The one thing we never did learn was if it tasted good, we couldn't eat it on Sabbath, because that was kind of a day for doing more of that than usual, because it was the one pleasure that was left. Now, today I want to talk to you from Genesis 1 and 2. In order for us to understand how to experience the Sabbath, I think we have to spend a little bit of time trying to capture in our own minds maybe a new picture of what the Sabbath was given for in the first place. How many days did God spend creating the world? Genesis chapter 1, verse 31. Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was what? Very good. And the evening and the morning were the 6th day. Chapter 2, verse 1, thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. So how many days did God spend creating the world? According to this, 6 days. The heavens, the atmosphere, not heaven, but the atmospheric heavens, and the earth, and all the host. Who are the host? The fish, the birds, the animals, and us. The inhabitants, the atmosphere, the physical world, and the inhabitants were all finished at the end of the 6th day. Now, the word finished simply means to complete or to bring to completion. It's the Hebrew word kala. Kala. Thus, At the end of 6 days, the three-dimensional creation, which can be detected by the five senses, the ecosystem and its occupants, was finished. Verse 2. And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done. The word ended in verse 2 is the same Hebrew word as the word finished in verse 1. Once again, I don't understand why Bible translators do what Bible translators do sometimes. Because to me, that has a big difference in its understanding. If God finished the atmosphere, the physical earth, and the inhabitants in the first 6 days, but on the seventh day, he finished his work, what does that tell me about the completion of creation when the heavens, the earth, and the inhabitants were finished? Was creation finished with a physical world, a breathable atmosphere, and living occupants? Is that the fullness of what God intended to create? Evidently not, because on the seventh day, he finished his work, so evidently his work wasn't done when he'd finished the heavens and the earth and the host. Do you follow that? He still had something left to do to finish the job. So the first point I want to nail down today is that though God was finished with the physical, three-dimensional, five-sense creation in 6 days, God wasn't finished with his work. When God finished the physical creation, he wasn't finished with his work. When God was finished with construction, he was not yet finished with creation. What he had finished in 6 days, he brought to completion on the seventh. There's more to creation than physical construction. God did something on the seventh day that completed his work of creation. Therefore, I want to argue that the Sabbath is not a non-event. The Sabbath is not a vacancy. The Sabbath is not a day. God had already decided to have a 7-day week, but he got done with creation a day early, so he just kind of had to sit by till to begin the next week. The Sabbath is not an accident. The Sabbath is not something that by its very creation didn't happen. Do you follow what I'm trying to say? There were not 6 days of creation and then a blank day. There were 7 days of creation. What did God create on the seventh day? Verse 2. And on the seventh day, God finished, brought to completion his work. Oh, that's an interesting one, by the way. Evidently, God worked on Sabbath. If God brought to completion his work on the Sabbath, then he must have worked on the Sabbath. Isn't that right? Did Jesus get in trouble for working on the Sabbath, according to the Jewish idea of what was work and what wasn't work? He got in trouble for working on the Sabbath. He healed a man of all the horrible things. He took somebody's pain away on the Sabbath. And they got very upset with him. And what was his answer in the Gospel of John? I believe it's in about chapter 6, 7, or 8. I'll get it close there. He said, "My Father has been working and I am working." And they said, "Oh, you're a Sabbath breaker. You work on the Sabbath." Well, guess what? God worked on this very first Sabbath. In fact, God finished his work. Now, he didn't work on the heaven or the earth or the people, but he finished his work. Have you got that? So God worked on the first Sabbath. Verse 3, then God blessed us, or verse 2, I'm sorry, we're still in verse 2. And on the seventh day, God finished his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done. Now, you see, that there's the problem. How can you rest and work all at the same time? Well, evidently, it only took him part of the day to finish the work, and then he rested the rest of it. Is that how we should look at it? And God rested on the seventh day. The word rest is the word Shabbat. Shabbat. From which we get the word Shabbat. Shabbat means, well, look at a verse. Just keep your place there and go over to Genesis chapter 8, verse 22. God was talking to Noah after Noah got out of the ark. And God has just made a promise, signified with a rainbow, that he will never again flood out the entire world. And in Genesis 8, 22, he says, well, the earth remains, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and winter and summer, and day and night, shall not Shabbat. What does the word Shabbat mean? To cease. To stop doing something. To cease some activity. And God Shabbated on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. So God finished his work and ceased his work all at the same time. How in the world do you do that? How can you finish your work and cease your work all in the same event? Well, the second thing I want to point out today, what was the first one? When God was finished with construction, he wasn't finished with creation. The second thing I want to point out today is that the concept of Shabbat or Sabbath does indeed mean ceasing, but it does not signify inactivity. The concept of Shabbat does not mean one lives in suspended animation for the day. The concept of Shabbat is God quit doing one thing for what reason? So he could do another. God quit working on the physical creation because it was done, but he worked on something else instead. So we're back to that point I made earlier. The Sabbath is not a non-event. It is not a blank day at the end of the week. It's not a vacancy in the creation week, in God's week. Rather, the ceasing does not signify a non-event or inactivity. It's not an extra day thrown in to round out the seven because God got done early. The concept of Shabbat is very simple. You cease working so you can start playing. You cease crying so you can start laughing. You cease fighting so you can start loving. You cease firing so you can start negotiating. And sometime before too long, I'm going to cease preaching so we can start eating. You follow that? The concept of Shabbat isn't to stop doing everything. It's the Shabbat from something so you can be very actively engaged in something else. Shabbat is not a non-event. It is a statement of prioritizing, not of inactivity. And in fact, the real point of Shabbat is you cease the ordinary so you can enter into the extraordinary. God ceased his focus on physical construction of the earth and its inhabitants, but what did he do in its place? What was his new activity? He ceased construction so he could start or commence with or engage in or focus on something else. Verse 3, then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. First of all, in verse 3, it starts with a then in my translation, New King James. I've been taking Hebrew with Marilyn down at Fuller Seminary, and I'm not very good at Hebrew yet. It's a difficult language. But I thought, you know, I think I've learned enough, I can look at the Hebrew and check something out. And sure enough, I checked it out. Scratch the word then. There's no concept in the Hebrew of this, then this, then this. There is not a progressive concept in the wording here. The construction of the first word of verse 3 is the same as the first word of verse 2. And on the seventh day, God ended his work, verse 2. Middle phrase of verse 2. And he rested, verse 3. And God blessed. Just put an and in there. It's just part of what we're looking at. So don't think 1, 2, 3 in order here or in progression of the day. You know, that he started out the day by finishing the work, then he rested for a little while, then he did a little blessing. It's not that. It's three things happened on this day. It's not chronological. Okay. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. The only verbs you can find that tell us what God did instead of creating the heavens and the earth, now on the seventh day, what he ceased from that, what did he do? The only verbs we can find that he did was he blessed and he sanctified. Now, I heard someone down here say rested. Drop this rested concept. It has nothing to do with resting up. It has nothing to do with getting caught up on the sleep you lost all week because you worked too long or stayed up too late watching TV. This resting has not a thing in the world to do with rest. It has to do with ceasing one thing in order to enter into another. The Sabbath is not a vacancy. Now, don't go home this afternoon and sleep in guilt, okay, if you take a nap. I'm not trying to make that point right now. I'm not telling you it's wrong to get a little extra sleep on Sabbath afternoon. It may be, it may be not. We'll discuss that in the future. What I am saying is that drop that word resting because it has absolutely nothing to do with the way we think of, oh, I'm really tired and I need some rest. It is a ceasing of one thing in order to enter into something else or free the time up for something else. If it's freed up so you can nap, so be it. We'll find out what Scripture says. But it is ceasing something so you can focus on something else. Okay. It says that on the Sabbath he did two things. He blessed and he sanctified. Well, now, I know what I felt like when I was a kid. If somebody, some dear old saint, kind of laid their hand on me and blessed me. You know, what a nice old person. Kind of quaint, you know, kind of special. What did a blessing mean to the ancients? A blessing was a big deal. A blessing was worth Jacob going to the point of deceiving his father in order to get the blessing instead of his brother. And the blessing was not primarily that he got twice as much of his dad's stuff. The blessing was this whole spiritual concept that I frankly have never really figured out. Gary Smalley has written a book called The Blessing. I haven't read it. I've heard good things about it. There's a book on it. There's a workbook. There's videos talking about the importance and the value of us learning how to bless our children. I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about it, right? To the ancients, a blessing was absolutely important, vital, big business. Jacob wanted that blessing. When he fought with the man all night that he thought was an enemy and found out it was an angel, then he hung on to the angel, and what did he say? I will not let you go unless you bless me. The word for blessing, barak, has deep, lasting significance in the thinking of the ancient people. A blessing is not some kind of a quaint little phrase that A blessing is not just a compliment. Maybe that's the best way I could put it. Isn't that what we see a blessing now? Just kind of a nice compliment, you know? No, a blessing had power, it had authority, it had meaning. It's like it had substance, it had weight. So when it says God blessed this day, and he blessed the seventh day, there's something there. The problem is it's not something you can grab. It's not something you can taste or hear or feel. But I'd like to argue that it is incredibly and intensely real. But in our fallen, sinful, distorted mindset, we have a hard time dealing with anything we cannot deal with our five senses. In fact, the whole scientific community has decided to write out of any possibility of existence anything that cannot be detected with the five senses. God says, I blessed that day. All I'm trying to argue here is that is as real as light or air or dry land or plants or birds or fish or the sun or the moon or the animals or the people. In fact, the other 6 days, God did things that are absolutely necessary to our ecosystem. Could we exist without light? No. How about air? No. Dry land? I'm sure glad we get to get dried out once in a while. We get dried out down here more than I ever guessed we could be dried out, but you know what I mean. Lots of dry land down here. Do we need the sun and the moon? You know, that's all part of the systems that we have. It's very important to us. Without the sun, we'd all freeze and be in the dark. We need the fish and the birds and the animals. They keep the ecosystem going. What is the one part? What is the most expendable part of creation in the ecosystem could carry on? Us. Isn't that right? We are the most expendable part of the creation. God made the creation for us to live within. The creation could go on pretty well, just fine without us. In fact, we're the problem now. But everything God did on the other 6 days, all those things were vital to the system that God created. I want to argue that what he did on the seventh day, though it is not tangible, tasteable, or scientifically quantifiable, is also vital to the existence and the completion of God's creation. The blessing is not optional. It says he not only blessed the day, but he sanctified it. Now, the word sanctified is the same word that's translated holy. The fourth commandment ends by saying, for in 6 days the Lord made heavens and earth, the sea, and all that's in them, that in them is, and he rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. That's the same Hebrew word as sanctified in verse 3. Okay? Literally, he blessed the Sabbath day and he holified it. Now, what do you have when you have a holified day? You have a holy day, from which we get the word holiday. That's all a holiday is a day that has been set aside, the ceasing of ordinary in order to enter into the extraordinary. A holiday. God made the seventh day holy. Well, that's about as easy to get your hands around as blessed, isn't it? I can't touch it. I can't taste it. I can't feel it. How do I do it? I was thinking about If I had 7 glasses of water up here, which one could you use to quench your thirst? Anyone, right? But if I took some lemon and some sugar and I squeezed the lemon and put the sugar in the 7th one, which one has lemonade? You can quench your thirst on any of the 7, but only from the 7th do you get lemonade. Do you follow that? The water has been sweetened. It has been flavored. Dare I say that somehow, trying to understand this concept of blessed and sanctified, God sweetened the time and flavored the day. You can meet with God any day of the week, but you only get lemonade one day. There's something different about the time and the day and the atmosphere, though it is not tangible, touchable, tasteable, it is as different as a tree is from a rock. It is different as a skyscraper is from a vacant lot. It's real. I thought of maybe illustrating it this way. I have been in the process of landscaping our backyard now for the last about 19 months. There is a possibility that before the end of the year we will have grass. We might actually be able to get across the backyard without walking through the mud within the next few weeks. We're making progress. It's very slow. But let's just suggest that I've finished landscaping my backyard. For the last 6 days, I've been working on it, and I've done the grading and the terracing and the block and the brick and the tile and the flagstone, the sprinklers, the sod, the trees, the bushes, the flowers, the lighting. It's all done. And then I said, so 6 days, I did all of that. And then on the 7th day, I finished the work of the backyard. Well, you'd say, well, what did you do? What was left to do? Oh, I say, well, what I did was I landscaped the atmosphere. I sweetened the air. I added some wow and feel. I installed some romance. Planted a little grace, connected up some intimacy, added some ambiance and experience. That's what I did on the 7th day. And you're going to say, this guy is really weird. Because we can't do that. We don't have the ability to do that. We can create things that make ambiance, but we can't install romance and intimacy into the backyard. We can't create atmosphere so when you go into the backyard, it just has a feel that just permeates the air. We can't do that. I'd like to suggest God can. God has the ability to take time and make it sweeter. He has the ability to take space and put atmosphere in it. And the only way we'll wrap our brains around this blessed and sanctified thing is to work at it from that angle. He added lemon and sugar. He put sweetness into the atmosphere. He made special time. Now, one of the interesting things I noted in thinking about this last week is for the first 6 days, God did something on each day. On the 7th day, he did something to the day. There's a big difference there. Again, in the 7th day concept, the day is special. The very presence of the day is special. One other way I thought of illustrating this is, you guys who are single, you can think about this. You who are not don't dream too hard, okay? Let's say that you had a new house that was kind of empty and bare, you know. They built. House, but you know, us guys, we're not too good with color and ambiance and decorating and all that kind of stuff. So you have this nice, brand new, empty, cold house. And so you hire a decorator. A young lady with skills in color and all the things about making a house feel good. So day by day, she comes over, and money's no object. She comes over, and you kind of give her ideas of maybe what you see, or I don't know what to do with this room. And she's, you know, day by day, different carpet goes in, curtains, pictures, do a little faux painting on the walls, you know, warm up the tones and the colors and the hues. And day by day, you're working with this young lady who is your decorator. And you kind of begin to enjoy working with her. You begin to notice her eyes and her hair and her hands and her appearance and her personality and her gentleness. And you begin to enjoy the conversation and the presence. And then one day, you finally finish the job. It's done. The house is beautifully and completely decorated. To add anything else would be to overdo. It's ready. It's done. And you pay her, and she leaves. What's missing? Her. You now have a beautifully decorated, empty house. Again. And you realize that all the carpet and all the curtains and all the paint and all the everything that was done didn't do half as much to that house as her presence. I'd rather live in an empty warehouse with a lover than to live alone in a palace. There's something about this Sabbath thing that God injected himself into that day. By blessing and sanctifying, that has to do with the very presence of God. Not so much something he does, but something he is in the middle of. Now we know, Genesis 3 verse 8, that God came walking in the cool of the day. And in the flow of the passage, it does not appear that after Adam and Eve sinned was the first time he came and walked in the cool of the day. It appears to be that that was what he did. He made Adam and Eve in his image so we could be friends with him. He made creation to be a companion with him. And he would come down in the cool of the day and visit with Adam and Eve. They would spend time together on a daily basis. And I hear people say, well, we worship God every day now, therefore we don't need to worry about the Sabbath. Every day is the Sabbath. Guys, try that on your anniversary. Well, we spend time together every day, so what's special about the anniversary? Kids, we spend time together every day, so what's special about a birthday? You know, I love my country every day, so what's special about the 4th of July? What's special is we cease the ordinary to enter into the extraordinary. If you do not have an ordinary relationship with your spouse, you cannot have an extraordinary one. Have you ever tried working so hard for a month or two that you hardly see each other and then you plan a day off together? What do you do most of the day? You either sleep or fight. Isn't that right? It's impossible to do extraordinary unless it's built on ordinary. We desperately need healthy, ordinary relationships with our spouses and with our children. And only then can we truly get into the extraordinary. Ceasing the ordinary, not to cop out and do nothing, but to get into the extraordinary. Now think about the Sabbath for a minute. When God holified this day, when God made this weekly holiday, sin had not yet come into a perfect world. God's plan was that sin wouldn't come in, that Adam and Eve would go to the tree of knowledge and evil, tell that serpent exactly where he could take his better ideas, and that they were going to keep trusting in God and remain a perfect people in a perfect world, living happily ever after. That's what God intended, and that's the world he made the Sabbath for. Now you think about that for a moment. I think it's almost impossible for us to wrap our brains around the idea of totally positive, productive work. Because almost all the work we do in our lives is trying to overcome the curse of sin. I'd love to run in the morning for the joy of running. I must admit I run for only one reason. To try to overcome the aging process or the bulging process. Right? Everything we do. You build a house, that's great. You spend the rest of your life trying to keep it from falling down. Most everything we do to try to overcome the curse of sin. So does that mean life in a sinless world is a non-event with nothing to do, a big vacancy? Do we ever give our kids that idea about heaven? A big vacancy we're all going to float around in forever. What does the Bible say about Adam and Eve? Chapter 2, verse 15. Then the Lord God took the man and put him in, the word man is literally Adam, he took Adam and put him in the Garden of Eden to what? To tend and to keep it. Wouldn't it be great to be able to garden without ever having to deal with a weed? All positive gardening, no negative gardening? We don't even know what that would be like. That's almost impossible to comprehend. A totally positive gardening experience. No negative. Chapter 1 says that God told Adam and Eve, take dominion of the earth and subdue it. God put humanity in charge of the world. Evidently, if they were to tend and keep the garden, there was something for them to do. It was all positive, it was all good, no negatives, but there was something to do. They were busy. And when God came in the cool of the day, they could choose to keep busy or they could choose to stop and walk around the garden with him. And when the Shabbat, day 7, came along and God shows up for the whole day instead of just the ordinary evening walk, you get the whole day extraordinary, they could have chosen to keep right on tending the garden. Now, I think the idea of the fourth commandment before sin is a ridiculousness. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. You're tending God's garden, all is good, God comes down, what are you going to do? Boy, I really hate to quit trimming the roses, you know. Have to go spend time with my Creator. No, it's like sitting a hungry man down before a scrumptious meal and then reading out of a book that says, thou shalt eat. You know, it doesn't make any sense at all. It's as natural as anything. You wouldn't need a fourth commandment. We're so mixed up, God has to remind us, oh, by the way, I'm going to show up, you know. You need me. But Sabbath was intended. The Sabbath concept was made for a world without sin. When the ordinary of life was so far beyond what we can even dream, it's hard to imagine fully, always pleasant, productive, positive employment. With no curse. make that the ordinary, and that's higher than we can think, and then add Sabbath on top of that. Move from that ordinary into the extraordinary of the Sabbath. That's the picture God tries to give us. For 6 days, God worked on the horizontal. On the seventh day, he connected up the vertical. The completeness that only the presence of God can bring. It was needed, valuable, and cherished in a perfect world. It's even more needed in an imperfect one, but how often is it really valued and cherished? There's a book put out a number of years ago, sometime I think during the first half of this century, called The Christian Experience. It was written by a man by the name of Julius Gilbert White. I picked it up one day. I've never read the rest of the book. I opened to a page. I was visiting in someone's home. I saw the book. I had a few minutes to kill. Opened it up and read this paragraph. It's the only part of the book I've read. This is what it said. Keeping the Sabbath is a spiritual experience. We cease from work that we may enter into the spiritual experience. Now, to paraphrase that biblically, we Shabbat so that we can Shabbat. We cease so we can enter into the experience. Ceasing our work is but the door to Sabbath keeping. Sabbath keeping is inside that door. God rested and then blessed the day. The blessing is more important than the resting. We rest that we may receive the blessing. Resting without receiving the blessing is not Sabbath keeping. Rather provocative words. We must not dismiss the Sabbath as the one day of creation on which nothing happened, the non-event, the vacancy. We must not dismiss blessing and sanctifying as quaint non-events or non-creations. Do not dismiss the power of what God can do spiritually in his creation. Do not acknowledge only the value of what you can physically touch and feel. Spiritual creation is important enough that God spent a whole day on it. In fact, when everything else was finished, that is the capstone that completed creation. It may not be visible or tangible, but it's more real than rocks and trees. And this whole battle in our lives of sin is to stop dismissing the spiritual, stop making the spiritual subordinate to the physical, stop letting the physical survival issues rob us of our spiritual side, stop settling for half of a life. No wonder Satan hates the Sabbath so much. If we truly tune into the spiritual realities it points to, he is finished. And it is actually God's presence that makes the Sabbath. It's actually God's presence that makes our lives truly whole and complete, meaningful and vital. And the Sabbath is all about God's presence being brought into time, making time no longer ordinary, but extraordinary. A beautiful garden is great, but a beautiful garden with God is incredible. When God finished the construction, he was not finished with creation. That was the first point. Point two, to Shabbat is not to go into suspended animation, but is to cease the ordinary in order to move into, actively into, the extraordinary. God does not do ordinary work on Sabbath. He does extraordinary work on Sabbath. Number three, the Sabbath itself is a spiritual creation, the seventh day of God's creative work. Though the creation is not physical and therefore is not ordinary, it is spiritual and therefore the creation itself is extraordinary. We were made to have extraordinary friendship with God. Let's pray. Lord, I believe that the only way we can ever learn what it means to experience Sabbath is to understand why you gave it in the first place. Your desire for an extraordinary time with us, extraordinary depth of relationship, the delight of the presence in the house. Lord, you built us a beautiful house. Why is it that we are so captivated with the house that we don't crave the presence? Teach us, Lord, what it means to live an ordinary life of deep holiness, of deep righteousness, of deep communion with you. And then, Lord, show us what it means to, from that ordinary walk with you, which is rich and good, to move on your Sabbath into the lemonade, into the sweeter, into the extraordinary walk that you have, the even better than the wonderful of the ordinary. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.